Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Even though you make payroll every Friday, you don't have a guaranteed paycheck. You're the owner, and you eat what you kill.
Welcome back to 13 After. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. And our special guest is the senior editor at the Kiplinger Letters, Joan Pride. Joan, welcome back.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you with us. And she's also a member of our Brain Trust and recently promoted to senior editor. Congratulations again on that, Joan.
Thank you very much.
You guys start the letter by talking about merger fever. The merger wave is still sweeping across not the country, but the world.
Oh, sure. And this has actually been going on for quite a while, and it just keeps building and building. And I think some people have waited for the government to clamp down on these things, and by and large, they are not.
But remember, we're talking about the world, and when you say government, which government are you talking about?
Well, that's a good point.
Isn't that the problem?
That's right. That's part of the problem. Exactly.
Well, what are we going to do about it?
I have no idea. I think that's part of the problem.
Kiplinger's supposed to have all the answers, Joan.
we're working on that one.
Well, it's just an indication of another indication, magnification of the fact that this is a global economy. I mean, we've got, you know, we've talked about Daimler-Benz and Chrysler merging, and what Ford and some of the other European countries, companies, and I've forgotten, you know, who else? What I think Ford owns Jaguar now and some of the others.
Right.
But folks, you need to be paying attention to this because and here are some of the top industries that Kiplinger predicts are good candidates for consolidation. That's the telecommunication industry, which is really already happening there.
Oh, yes.
The internet, cable, broadcast companies, also financial services, mining, processing operations, utilities. Now that's interesting.
Yeah.
What do you know about that?
Well, utilities, you know, with the deregulation of utilities, particularly in the electrical area, that's really beginning to come on, and it's really hard to tell what that's going to mean going forward.
Now, if you are a Chicken Little type person, and you hear about all these mergers, then and you're a conspiratorial type of person, you're looking for all the sinister things and everything. Then you'll sort of stick your head in the sand and boy, how about that for mixed metaphors, but if you're smart and you really are a student of what's going on, you'll find the opportunity in all these mergers.
Well, and as an example, go back to a couple of years ago when banks were merging all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
That's cooled down a little bit, but when that was really hot, the naysayers were going around saying this is the death of small banks.
Yep.
And in fact, as we're going to see in a little while, that has not been the death of small banks. In fact, many of them have thrived and have used the whole merger mania to get customers.
That's right. And one of the things that's interesting, we did some shows on that. In fact, that hasn't been a couple of years ago. That's actually been as recent as the last year.
Yes.
And I've done some shows on that. And here's what some of the experts that were on the show said. This I remember this one guy said he saw it as becoming like a barbell, like a dumbbell. In other words, big on both ends and very small in the middle. In other words, large banks on one end, very successful and flourishing. Small banks on the other end, very successful and flourishing. But in the middle, the mid-sized banks, the regionals, those are the ones that are going to go away.
Yeah, they're the ones that couldn't find their niche.
And that's what's probably going to happen in a lot of other industries.
Sure.
And so small business owners, we've got some opportunity. But you've got to find the opportunity. You've got to look at these mergers not as a threat, but as an opportunity.
Well, the worst thing you can do is be Chicken Little. I think that's the point.
No question about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No question about it. One of the things that I think we need to take a lesson from the big guys who are merging, and this is something that you guys point out in your KSS section, the Kiplinger Special Services section, is that these companies that are merging want to make sure that when they emerge, however they're structured, whoever they're structured with, that they are either the number one or the number two entity in the marketplace.
And you know, what happens sometimes is that they are, briefly, and then somebody else merges and they become number five or number six.
But we need, as small business owners, we need to pay attention to that and take a lesson from them, and try to think about what are some consolidations that we can do ourselves in our own marketplace.
Right, and in fact, that's one of our suggestions is fight, as we say, fight fire with fire.
Mm-hmm.
If you think you're being pushed around by a very large supplier that has just merged or some other type of company, maybe you and some of your brethren or sistren can combine and fight back a little bit.
Is there really such a word as sistren?
Well, I just made it, so I guess there is.
I've heard that before. I just didn't know if it was a real word called, if there really was a word called sistren. Anyway, well, you're exactly right, Joan. And the thing that you need to pay attention to is, are you losing market share? Are there some things that are happening that are making you be less viable? Look around, and there may be some opportunities in your marketplace. Maybe not even in your immediate marketplace. It might be the next market over, where you can consolidate with some folks, and maybe part of the activity, maybe it's not that you actually buy each other out or merge legally. Maybe you just do some marketing together.
That's right.
A lot of different things that you can do to help you become, to help you maintain the strength in the marketplace. Also, another thing, all these mergers are changing the way these big companies do business. You need to find out what the new ways of doing business are and make sure that you are offering corresponding services and products for the new ways they're doing business.
Yeah, and that's why you have to keep up with what the big guys are doing. Don't assume that it has nothing to do with you.
That's right, because it certainly does. In fact, if you have a contract, this is a threat, folks. If you have a contract with a company, and all of a sudden you hear about it being them being consumed, and it may be the company you have a contract with is a sub company of a bigger company, when you hear about XYZ and ABC merging, maybe XYZ owns the company you have a contract with, and you didn't even know about it. You need to know who owns the companies that are in your area so that you know how your contract is being affected. Joan, people would be surprised when they find out how many multinationals are in their marketplace. I'll bet you the average market statistical area out there, if they call their Chamber of Commerce and said, what international companies own what companies in our area, I think they would be surprised. I bet they'll find that there'll be anywhere from 3 to maybe 15 or 20, depending on the size of the company.
There's companies right in your neighborhood, I'm sure, that you don't realize are owned by a multinational.
Yep. And all these mergers are affecting, and if you've got contracts with those companies, you need to make sure that you, when you write a new contract, that contract endures as long as the contract should.
That's right. No
question. Stand by, Joan. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after. I'm Jim Blessing, Small Business Advocate. We will be right back. We are back, and we're grooving with Joan Fry, senior editor of the Kiplinger Letters. Joan?
Hey, I'm happily married.
888-822-8255. That's our phone number, and our website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan, you have some thoughts on how to cope with all this merger mania.
Well, if you looked in Kiplinger Special Services, you would find some different points about this. And one thing, I go back to the example of banks because I find that fascinating. Small banks are doing very well these days, despite all these big banks merging and having all these services they can provide to people. The small banks provide personal service. And we've got a quote in here from a man who runs a small bank in Kansas City, and he says, whenever a merger is announced, we advertise that we've had the same owner for 120 years. It gets us business.
Hmm.
And people love that. They love the continuity.
Absolutely.
They love knowing they can work with the same loan officer for 10 or 15 or 20 years who really knows what they're concerned about and what their business is like, rather than getting passed from loan officer to loan officer who may be 1,000 miles away.
Right. And I'll tell you, there's so many layers of detail that are not pertinent to the loan transaction, the banking transaction that you're going to have with the bank, but are particular to that big bank. There's so many layers of approval all the way up. And I deal with this every day with my clients, and it's a marked difference between doing business with a big bank and doing business with a small bank.
Absolutely.
But there are some shortcomings, some some deficiencies that maybe that's not the best way to say it, but there are some differences, maybe I should say, between a big bank and a little bank, especially from the standpoint of how much you can borrow from them. They do have lending limits to any one customer, and so that's where the reason you see people, a lot of times, Joan, you'll see people starting out with a business, and they'll start out with hometown bank, and they'll grow, and they'll grow, and then they'll move into a second bank, but still stay do business with a hometown bank, and eventually, I mean, I've seen companies that eventually grow completely out of regional banks, and they just, they were just being so successful, and they literally had to have the big banks to do business with them. And of course, then ultimately they went public.
But yet the small bank is still back there finding those good small business customers.
They're growing those little companies that are going to one day perhaps go public.
Yeah,
no question about it.
Now, connected with this, another good idea, especially in this full employment environment we have, is that you can often steal away employees, maybe disgruntled employees who were either still working for the merged company or who may have been downsized in a merger.
Exactly.
There's good talent that's out there that gets thrown out after a merger that you could pick up.
Or if all of these mergers, or if just one merger actually is all it took, if one merger cost you your job, if you've been downsized, look around for those kinds of opportunities for yourself. Start your own business. You know, Joan, there are 800,000 people doing that this year.
Hey, that's what's making the economy so strong.
By 2003, I think it is, they're projecting, some of the research I've seen, they're projecting 1 million a year, net new businesses, small businesses.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and all these people, many of them are products, I guess maybe I should say the victims, in a way, at least initially they're a victim of all these mergers and acquisitions, but ultimately they're not the victim, they're the victor, and I think my audience has heard me say that I've gone back and thanked both of the people that downsized me the two times I was downsized. I've gone back and thanked both of them. I'm serious. All right, what's next?
Okay, another thing to remember is that you should be diversifying your business if you can. That broadens your customer base, and it makes you less vulnerable to a merger that might affect you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we talked about contracts a minute ago, Joan. And if you got one big contract and you're feeding off of that contract and you're anticipating your retirement off of that contract, you're operating in some very dangerous waters.
Well, and that's a good point, because connected with that is another suggestion we have, which is to go looking for new business that may become available through a new consolidation. Don't assume that a newly merged company has its own suppliers. The new management may be ready to look at a completely different supplier, and you come in with a great proposal, and they might be willing to do business with you.
And I promise you, the chances are excellent that if you go into a newly merged entity, and I'm talking about the same people you worked with a year ago before the merger, talk to them about outsourcing, because I promise you, part of their business model for this new organization is outsourcing. I promise you that is.
Yep.
Stand by, Joan. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 29 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor of the Kiplinger Letters, 888-822-8255. We'll be right back. We are back. Welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I want to remind you that if you go to my website, smallbusinessadvocate.com, you can hear this visit, the entire visit with Joan Pride, on demand, whenever you want to.
You can hear it over and over and over again.
Over and over and over again, to your heart's content, which I'm sure your mother does all the time.
Oh,
and secretly Joan does, by the way, folks. She won't admit it, but secretly I know she does.
Oh, sure.
She likes to hear her voice.
Ew, I hate it.
Joan, give us the website for Kiplinger, please.
It is www.kiplinger.com.
And folks, check out the KSS section, Kiplinger Special Services. Actually, on the left, it just says Special Services. Click on that. Go there. Order that, or take the free trial if you want to. You will like it, I promise you. That includes, when you subscribe to that, that includes the availability of the letter online. It's all part of the package.
That's
right, Joan?
That's absolutely right. We give you a free trial and a money-back guarantee on that.
Can't beat that, folks. Can't beat that with a stick. 888-822-8255. Joan, at the top of page 2, auto dealers will showcase lots of new models.
That's absolutely right, including Ford and GM, and also the Saturn line is going to have a different look to it next year. but I think you are more interested in what they're doing online.
Yeah, you know, I really don't care about the models. A lot of these models are kind of crummy anyway. We're just not in the age of beautiful automobiles like we were back in the 60s. I mean, I grew up in the.
Oh, here we go.
I was paying attention to cars, and I mean, from about 1955, when Ford.
Now I was not born then.
I know when Ford made the Crown Victoria, and then Chevy made the 57 Chevy, and
my parents were married that year.
All the way through into probably there was about a 10-year period of time when American automobiles were absolutely the sexiest forms in the world. Non-human forms, anyway. And now automobiles look like eggs. So I don't want to talk about the stock, but I want to talk about what Ford is doing with Microsoft. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. That's going to be very exciting.
Yeah. Now they're not going to do away with they're not going to actually sell the automobile through over the internet. But Ford and Microsoft are getting together, and I'm just giving you this from memory, Joan, because. I didn't take it down, but it looks like Ford is going to align themselves in some way with Microsoft to allow people to select their automobile online, and then that automobile is delivered to the dealer, and the dealer actually sells the automobile.
That's right, and I think we'd actually talked about that in Kiplinger in the past, that eventually you're just going to be able to order your automobile directly from the manufacturer. You don't have to go to the lot and pick whatever they have there. You can design your own custom car for yourself.
And I've got some friends who are in that business, who are in the automobile business, and their business is changing dramatically. And I have to wonder 10 years from now, I really do have to wonder how neutralized, how diminished, maybe I should say, the dealer itself in the area of delivering a new car is going to be.
But you know what's interesting about this? You always could order a car from the manufacturer.
Yeah.
Because my dad used to do that. He used to drive the local dealer crazy because the guy kept trying to sell him what he had on the lot because that's what he had to get rid of.
But he ordered it from the dealer.
He always ordered it. Well, he ordered it through the dealer, but it didn't help the dealer get the cars off his lot.
Didn't help him with his inventory, but he did sell an automobile.
But the problem was it would take 6 to 8 weeks to get the darn thing or longer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we're talking about is you're going to be able to pretty soon order a car like that and it'll be there within the week.
Right.
But you're right, you know, the car dealerships, it's akin, I would say, to brokerage houses. What is online selling going to do to these people who have their own businesses, many small business owners, who are dealing with people face-to-face on a day-to-day basis?
What's going to be interesting to me is, Joan, is in this thing about online business, one of the things that you like about buying an automobile is you like to go down and look at them and kind of whoop it up a little bit, get excited and, you know, drive it around and the dealer lets you take it home with you and it spends the night in your garage and all that. And you get to feel it and smell the leather and go through the process of buying the thing. And you're not going to have that. Now, my point is, at what point in time, and I'm not just talking about automobiles here, at what point in time are consumers going to say, okay, we've gone too far. High tech has taken me beyond, so far away from high touch. I want a little bit of high touch back.
Right.
What do you think?
Well, buying a book is the same way.
Yeah.
It's nice to go into a bookstore and sit in a big comfortable chair and look through some of the books and decide what you want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to buy books online now, but do you really want to keep doing that?
Yeah, and we've got to be prepared to pay for that comfortable chair.
Right.
Because that's if a book is $15 online and it's $18 in the bookstore, don't go to the bookstore and look at it, sit in your comfortable chair and get to know the book, and then go buy it online for $15. That's not right, folks.
Now, the other thing, though, Jim, is there are probably people listening to us who hate to shop who think we're crazy.
Well, if you don't want to shop, that's fine. But what I'm saying is you've got people who are providing you with heating and air conditioning and a nice safe place to read a book or whatever it might be. Listen to music, look at a sofa, whatever it might be. You know, be sure to recognize that you're paying for that in your price. You're paying for the availability of that. But back to my earlier thought, I just wonder how far it's going to be interesting over the next, and it'll probably take, it may take 20 years for us to get to the point where you almost have a retro situation going on where you'll see car dealers coming back, so to speak.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? I don't know. I just wonder how far this online stuff is going to go, how far Americans, how far human beings, in fact, are going to go away from high touch. That's a word, by the way, John Naismith coined. It's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with our very good friend, Joan Pride, senior editor of the Kiplinger Letters. We are back. It's 44 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride, senior editor of the Kiplinger Letters, is with us. The Kiplinger Letters include the weekly flagship letter, which, by the way, Joan, this is the Kiplinger's, I just remembered, this is Kiplinger's 76th anniversary. This week, I think, actually, maybe today.
It might be today.
I think it's today.
So, happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday to Kiplinger.
Yeah.
I knew it was this week. In fact, when Knight was on last week, I mentioned it to him and congratulated him. But I do think, and by the way, folks, I have a copy of the original letter. It was one page. And I think it was, now I say the 23rd, maybe I'm thinking 1923.
That's okay.
Maybe it's, but it was in the 20s. It was like,
yeah,
it was like September the 21st or something like the 23rd in 1923. I think maybe that is. Maybe it's tomorrow. Anyway, happy anniversary.
Thank you very much.
The Washington Letter, which has been around for 76 years, is the weekly letter. They also have three biweekly letters, the Agriculture Letter, the California Letter, and the Tax Letter. Check those out, as well as the Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine, which is an outstanding magazine. And Joan, give us the website and to order those, to check on subscriptions and other things that Kiplinger offers, as well as the toll-free number if they would really rather use that.
Well, the website is www.kiplinger.com, and our toll-free number for subscriptions to the letter, to any of the letters, is 1-800-544-0155.
Yeah. All right. Quickly, let's talk about, as we move out of the auto dealer discussion that we had a minute ago, let's talk about something I think is kind of interesting. The wage hikes, you guys report, of the big three labor contracts that are coming up, you're predicting will not fuel inflation because of productivity gains.
That's right, and that includes more outsourcing, which has helped increase productivity.
And not help the unions at all.
But, you know, another thing that's going to happen is that there are going to be a lot of union members retiring over the next several years. And even though they're going to have to pay retirement benefits, which will be a big cost, they can shrink their union workforce.
Which from a union perspective is not good at all.
Right.
But these new contracts are going to be changing. They're going to be different. They're going to allow more outsourcing.
And the new contracts don't require that they replace these retiring union workers with new union workers.
Absolutely. Very interesting. I think this is a paradigm shift that's happening. It's already been happening, but I think it's going to continue to happen.
Right.
And I really believe, Joan, that one of the things that's going to contribute to this is this investor class that's emerging in America. Over 40%, approaching 50% of Americans are invested in the stock market, as they are, and many of these people are factory workers. They know that their retirement is invested in the stock market. These people are starting to read operating statements. They're starting to read financial statements. And the more you know about a financial statement, the more you understand what it takes to make a business go, and the less you'll be, I think, inclined to be as sympathetic to a union.
Well, anyone now who has a 401k or an IRA is an investor.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone has to know about stock and bond markets.
Absolutely. Let's move over and talk about something that you are really an expert on, and that's the dollar flipping against the yen.
No.
This is confusing, isn't it?
I just know that the dollar's been flipping against the yen. Now, you're going to have to take it from there.
Well, a year ago, it was like 146 or something, in the 140s to the yen. And now, I think today, I saw this morning, it was 103, and you guys are predicting it's going to slip to maybe as low as 95.
Right. But the other weird thing is that it's not slipping against other currencies.
Yeah. This is not about... one of the things you guys reported is that... let me see if I can find my notes here. Oh, yeah. This is not about a weak dollar. It's about a strong yen, isn't it?
Right. And it's not about a weak U.S. economy. It's about the strengthening of Japan's economy.
Yeah. But it's actually causing problems for the Japanese, isn't it? I mean, you would think a strong yen would be good for them, but that's not the case.
Well, the thing, a weaker dollar actually helps U.S. exports. Mm-hmm. So that, in turn, the flip side of that would be the Japanese will have more trouble selling their exports.
That's right. Yeah, they were actually the thing that kind of saved a lot of the companies over there was when the dollar was strong against the yen, and so they were able to export a lot more stuff over here, which we bought. Well, by the way, and it helped a lot. It helped to helped to hold things together until Japan economy could recover, which it is doing, by the way, right now.
Right, that's absolutely right.
Okay, let's move on and talk about Alzheimer's drugs.
Now, this is interesting. There's a couple of different kinds of drugs that are coming up. One class of drugs, and I can name them all if you'd like. They all have these big long names. But
yeah, don't name them.
There's one class of drugs that's going to help people with their daily functions, like bathing, dressing.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't stop the disease from getting worse, or it won't stop the memory loss. So that's one class of drugs. But then there's another class of drugs that's, I think, not as far along in the approval process that actually protects your nerve cells from damage. So that would slow the disease's progression. So between those two drugs, those are two very good developments in the Alzheimer's area.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, of course, we know more about what's causing Alzheimer's now. The MRIs are telling us more about some of the destruction that's happening in the brain in this disease. And it is, in fact, a disease. It's not just people losing their memory.
Oh, no.
It's a disease.
It's a physical disease, right.
No question about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and one of the problems, they also need to improve diagnostics.
Yeah.
Because currently you can't diagnose it until you do an autopsy of the brain.
Absolutely. I didn't want you to say the names because that's not important. They'll get that from their doctor. I wanted you to tell what the drugs would do.
Right.
All right, folks, it's 50 after. We'll be right back with Joan Pryde. Don't go away. I'm Jim Glassick, the Small Business Advocate, and I appreciate your business. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com, and our very good friend and our guest this hour, Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters, is with us, and we're wrapping up the hour talking about some of the last things that we have to say about the most recent Kiplinger Letter. Joan, let's talk about what you guys reported here about a free service to block junk commercial email. I got to get this.
Don't you hate spam?
I hate it.
Yep. Well, this software program analyzes your incoming email. I can't imagine how it does this, but
it knows. It's free too, isn't it?
It's free, and it knows enough to pull out the spam and put it in a separate inbox. So you can go over to that inbox and look at it if you want, or never look at it.
Just to see if maybe it got something wrong. And I had somebody on here a while back, I think this week, I've forgotten. I know it was Jonathan Zuck last week was on, and he was saying that these things are good, but every once in a while it might get something that you missed. So you might want to check it.
Sure.
But at least you don't have to be inundated with it when you're busy.
Exactly.
Give us that website.
It is www.brightmail.com. So that's the two words, BRIGHTMAIL.
.com. I'll put those two words together.
Yep.
Check that out, folks. It's free.
Yep.
I think it's that's a good thing. I'm going to check it out myself.
Sure.
Another thing you guys reported is that more businesses are going to be farming out maintenance of their websites.
Well, I think a lot of businesses thought, well, we'll create a website and that'll be it. But it really isn't. You have to keep it fresh and updated. And for a lot of businesses, that's just too much work. So they're going to be outsourcing that.
The magic word is maintenance.
Yep.
You got to maintain that website.
Got to keep it up.
Yeah, and you need and the thing you got to remember is you've got to budget for that. Either if you're doing it, you got to budget your time, or if you're going to hire it done, you've got to budget that expense.
That's right.
You cannot put up a website, at least one that's going to where you're going to try to do some business without doing some maintenance on it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move over into politics a little bit.
Okie doke.
You guys are saying something that I have not heard anybody else say yet.
Well, we've gone way out on a limb.
I'm kind of glad to see this though.
We're saying that Senator John McCain of Arizona is the best one positioned to challenge George W. Bush.
Not Steve Forbes.
No.
Not Liddy Doe.
Uh-uh.
John McCain.
Yes.
I like him.
And interestingly enough, you know, he skipped the Iowa caucuses, which was probably a good move.
Yep. That was such a pandering thing.
Well, it was a pandering thing, and it was a beauty contest that really didn't mean anything, except if you did badly, you didn't look very good.
Right.
But he saved his money.
It was low percentage for him.
Right, exactly. So he's looking carefully at New Hampshire, South Carolina, and California.
You know what I like about him? I like him because he shoots straight.
Yeah, and he has a new book out that I think is doing very well.
I haven't read that book. What's the title? Do you remember?
I was afraid you'd ask that.
Faith of Our Fathers.
Yes.
I think. I just remembered.
Yeah.
I heard him interviewed the other day, and I was impressed. He was asked some pointed questions. He answered the pointed questions. I think he's the real deal. I mean, I think he's a real guy. I think he's got some character. You may not like his character.
Well, he's a little conservative for me.
Well, but he's not. But you know what? He's unpredictable.
Oh, that's great.
There's some things. I know he's too conservative for you. He's not too conservative for me. But I will tell you that I think this is the kind of guy that in any given month would be disappointed with him one week, and I would be disappointed with him the next week.
Well, I could see
that. I think that's what we need. That means he's his own man. See.
Yeah.
I don't want any politician who is totally predictable. Henry Waxman is totally predictable.
Oh, that's true.
Charles Schumer is totally predictable.
Jesse Helms.
Ted Kennedy is totally predictable.
Hey, you're naming all Democrats. There's plenty of Republicans.
Well, okay, give me one.
Jesse Helms.
Oh, well, okay, maybe
yeah.
So. Hey, Joan, I got to wrap it up for this hour. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, I got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.